Hello and welcome to the Disney Magic Hour for a bonus episode where I review the latest Disney release directed by Steven Spielberg, the BFG. No music or anything for this show. I'm just going to kind of give you my thoughts on the film as a whole. I'm not going to go into spoilers. I don't think there's many to give anyway, but we'll talk about that actually. But we had an opportunity to watch the film a day ahead of time, courtesy of a D23 screening that was held down in Disney Springs at the AMC Theater. And this was a film I was very much looking forward to. I am a Spielberg fan. I'll give you, full honest right up front. I've always been a Spielberg fan. Many of you know if you listen to the show for a while, and Jaws is my favorite film. I'm also a fan of Willy Wonka, and that is, of course, was originally written by Ronald Dahl, who also wrote the novel version, the child book version of the BFG. So how does the combination of Spielberg, Disney, and Ronald Dahl work when you put them on screen together? Because I think that there's a fair amount of history that you can point at when you see all of these huge elements come together and then the final product fizzles, doesn't quite gel as well, et cetera, yada, yada. I will say I don't think the BFG falls into that, but let's first go into some just background stuff on this. This is, of course, as I said before, directed by Spielberg, based on the Ronald Dahl book, and it tells the story of young Sophie, played well by Ruby Barnhill, and it's about her adventure, but more friendship with the big friendly giant. That's what BFG stands for. And the BFG is capture performance by best supporting actor last year for Bridge of Spies, Mark Rylance. Now, Mark Rylance and Spielberg, this is now their second film together. This will definitely not be their last one. And if I had to say what the best part of this film is, without question, it's Mark Rylance. He is spectacular in this. I know that, you never get nominations for films where you do motion capture and whatnot, but he was the heart and soul of this film, even more so than the girl. It's interesting because you would think, like, young girl, she's going to be the heart of the film. And while, yes, the character of Sophie does have a lot going on for her, the real bloodline of this film is the BFG. Now, this film was actually screenwritten by Melissa Matheson, who recently passed away, I want to say last year of cancer, unfortunately. You would know her best as a screenwriter for E.T. She and Spielberg worked a number of times together. I think they initially met on the set of Raiders of the Lost Ark because she was dating Harrison Ford at the time. They wound up getting married for a stretch. They also worked together on the Twilight Zone film, if I remember correctly. Kick the Can, I believe she wrote that for him. Going towards the technical of it, cinematography was done by Yanis Kaminski. Now, Kaminski has been working with Spielberg for a long time now. Just to go over the films that they have done together, Schindler's List, Lost World, let's not worry about that one, Amistad, Saving Private Ryan, AI, Minority Report, Catch Me If You Can, The Terminal, War of the Worlds, Munich, Crystal Skulls, look, it looked nice, don't worry about that, it's okay, War Horse, Lincoln, Bridge of Spies, BFG, and he is going to be the cinematographer on Spielberg's next film, Ready Player One, based on the Ernest Cline novel, which, little side note, Spielberg spoke recently about that and said that there's a lot of references to Spielberg within that book. There's a lot of references in that book. It's almost kind of just like a catcall of references. He took out most of the ones made to him, which I thought was pretty interesting. Maybe he just thought it was a little too self-serving, but Kaminski is in on this one now. Kaminski and Spielberg have had, I don't want to say a very repeatable visual element, but they sort of have. It's been a lot of washed out colors, harsh light, very stark light, sharp lines. And it's worked for the films that they have done that fit that category. It works extremely well. That would not work for this film. And Spielberg appropriately chooses a much vaster color palette than Bridge of Spies or any of his more recent work, which I also think is very excellent. I've said before, I think he's in kind of John Ford mode where just everything he's putting out, even if you're not 100% fan of it, there's something to latch onto. But I've really been impressed with his recent run of films. So it's a nice return to that fantasy world for Spielberg that I have not really seen him dabble in very much recently or in recent memory at all. I'm trying to think of what the last one would have been where he got to really play with color this much, and I really can't even think of it. There was some spots in AI when you go into, you know, the main city and whatnot, that you got a lot of color popping and whatnot, but this is kind of a return to that. So I was very, very excited to see that. This film does something very, very difficult, or maybe not difficult, but it's just not happening anymore. You see films now do things with a very ironic kind of wink at you. You know, everything is done like, oh, you see how silly this was? Hint, hint. And you know what? For certain films, it works fine. For certain ones, it feels like it's apologetic because it doesn't know how to make it correctly. This film embraces fantasy without cynicism or irony. It simply is just there. And that's whether or not you're up for it. Now, that is a whole other question. Whether you can watch something that unblinkingly does very silly things and then does a very heart-filled thing without ever giving itself a way out. You know what I mean by that? It's maybe not something a lot of audiences are comfortable with. They maybe want to see something like that and then get a moment of, oh, it's okay. We're not really being that serious about this. But this film, it embraces that culture immensely and does not let go of it. The visual magic that is the giant country is really, really something, especially when you go and visit a tree. That's all I'll really say about it. Fans of Animal Kingdom, you might look at it and go, huh, it might, you know, that could, they could do this. They could do something like this at Animal Kingdom, but it looks real, but still retains a dreamlike quality. And for me, that was exactly what I thought it should have looked like. And it really made me wish that we would get more Tintin films. I know that we only got the one from Spielberg and it didn't do very well financially. Peter Jackson was due to do the next one, and then they were going, I think they were going to co-direct the third one together. And just seeing how far the technology has increased so quickly, I think, unfortunately, it's a bit of a missed opportunity that we never will get, or to my knowledge, we'll never get another one of those. The simplicity of the plot may be one to surprise people when you hear the words Disney, Spielberg, Dahl, because you might go in expecting to be, I don't know, blown away. You know, just blown away. Like, oh my God, I can't believe this happened. I couldn't believe this happened next. That's not what this movie is. This movie is about its simplicity in the plot because it's there to give room for the heart of the film, and that it has in spades. There's no real, I would say, bombastic action sequence. There is an action sequence, and you could say that there were two if you really wanted to argue what exactly is an action sequence, an action piece. But it's almost minor to the plot. I mean, it's not. It's, you know, without that, other, you know, the finale does not happen and whatnot. But it's not the moments that when I look back at this film that I'm going to remember. I'm going to remember the workshop of the big friendly giant. I'm going to remember the tree that they visit. I'm going to remember the landscape. I'll remember the quieter moments when the BFG is walking through the city. I'm going to remember how excited I was when I saw Rebecca Hall pop up in this film. I love Rebecca Hall. If you don't know who Rebecca Hall is, well, maybe you do. She was in Iron Man 3. She was in The Prestige. She was in a number of other films, but she's kind of, in my opinion, vastly overlooked. You know, just recently she had an incredible part in The Gift. She was also in The Town. She was in Vicky Cristy Barcelona. Like, she's in a ton of films, but I feel that she doesn't get a lot of notice at the same time. It's kind of interesting, but she pops up in the film for a, kind of an important sort of part. Again, I don't want to get into any spoilers or anything like that. There is a sequence about three quarters of the way through the film, and the film is kind of lengthy. I would say it was almost 2 hours long. I'll get you an exact number on that in a moment or so, but there's a sequence, you know, about two-thirds of the way through the film where I was really surprised at how far they were going on the farcical comedy. You know, like almost, it's so British. It's really so crazily British. Insane things are happening, but everyone just has a straight face, except for our lead actress And, you know, I got to go into that a little bit more. Ruby Barnhill, who plays Sophie, she does such a great job of bridging our communication and our connection to the world of the BFG, the, what is it called, the Giant Lands? I wrote it down because I wanted to say Land of the Giants, and I'm like, no, that was a TV show that was on Nick at Night. I used to watch all the time. Giant Country. She is our line into that world. She asks the questions that we want to ask, and she asks them with such a heart. She and Rylance are phenomenal together. I would love to know how they went about shooting these scenes because, unless they did just heavy, huge, perspective angles and whatnot, they probably weren't set up the way you see it in the film. So I would love to see how they went about shooting this film. I try not to do that before I see a movie because then, I don't know, a little bit of the magic's gone. But now that I've seen it, I can go in and I can kind of take a closer look at that. There's a really great little role played by Rafe Spall. He plays a character called Mr. Tibbs. He was in Prometheus. He had a role in Shaun of the Dead. He was in A Good Year with Russell Crowe. Not a great movie. Don't worry about that. But he plays someone, again, I don't want to go into anything of like where the film goes because I wasn't expecting it. I never read the book, you know. It was something I just never read as a kid. I was always a Willy Wonka, kid, but I just didn't know of the other one, as kids sometimes don't know. You know about one thing, not about the one next to it. So he has a great little comedic role. Again, straight-laced, very straightforward. Penelope Wilton plays a phenomenal role. She was the mother from Shaun of the Dead, actually, for you for you fans of the Cornetto trilogy. She also played in Match Point. In my opinion, one of Woody Allen's best films ever, and it never really gets mentioned because it's unlike any other Woody Allen film. So there's just these bunch of great little roles all over the place, and then they're all supported on the back of Mark Rylance as the BFG with his, holding the hand very gently of Ruby Barnhill, who, well beyond her years, and it's another example of how great Spielberg is working with children. Now, that's a ton of positive I just gave you. If I had to give you a negative, it would be that the thin plot is made many, many, many ways thin. It may be a turnoff to you. You may, again, as I was saying earlier, you may be expecting more. Just more of a story, more to go along, but it's just not that film. And I don't think it needs to be that film. I heard somebody on the way out of the theater actually say, like, oh, well, I only like action films, and this didn't really have enough action. It's like, yeah, it's such a limited way of looking at things. I mean, whatever. It's up to him. He can do whatever he wants. But I feel like that's such a rough way of looking at things, so limiting that I would hope they don't watch that one type of film. So if you're going in looking for a Lord of the Rings type fantasy or a Jack and the Beanstalk type, thing happening at the end, you're not going to get that. What you're going to get is a film filled to the brim with heart, beautiful visuals, and some really fantastic performances with technology mixed in that is very seamless, very real, while containing a dreamlike quality. It just hit all the notes that if you said, here's a Spielberg fantasy film, this is what I would want. It doesn't have, the sequences of E.T. If I was to say one thing also, like negative, like there's no flying across the moon moment, as you see in the Amblin logo when the film starts up, because Amblin is also a co-producer on the film. There's no great moment like that. But there are so many beautiful, smaller moments that I think it works. It works very well, quite well. So I fully recommend it. I also, and I can't believe I'm saying this again, I feel like I've said this a number of times recently, go see this in 3D. It was shot with 3D in mind. You could absolutely see that. I mean, Spielberg, anyway, is a great worker of distance within the frame. So I think most of his films attune very well to 3D. If you have the 3D version of Jurassic Park on Blu-ray, you can tell right there. Like, obviously, that film was not shot for 3D, but the way that he works with, perspective and planes, it still looks incredibly well for 3D. You would have thought he did it purposely that way. So the 3D in this, I think, is essential. it brings you into the story a little bit more. It gives you a little more of that perspective when you are seeing things from the point of view of Sophie. And I don't think it's essential. The film still works without it, but I think it's a great asset. And how many times do you get to truly say that about 3D? Evidently a couple of times, because I do feel like I've said that like two or three times in the last number of months, which was not the way I was saying that towards 3D for a number of years, ever since Avatar came out and everyone decided that everything had to come out in 3D. But BFG, 100%. Go see it in a good theater. 3D, nice sound, because there's a lot of little sounds. When you get into the dealing of dreams and whatnot, there's a lot of small, specific, fascinating sound work being done. And if you're in a, you know, an iffy theater, you might lose a little bit of that. So, quite high on my list so far this year. I really enjoyed it. And I would 100% recommend going to see the BFG. And that's really it, guys. We are lastgenpodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter for this show at DIS Magic Hour Pod. Over on Facebook, if you search for Disney Magic Hour, you can find our little group. Head on over to iTunes, give a 5-star review. Melissa will read it at the end of the show, which we have next week is going to be Sleeping Beauty, actually. Ryan Wilson is going to be joining us once again, and we will be talking about 1959's Sleeping Beauty. In the meantime, you can also go over to Google Music Play into their podcast section, search for Disney Magic Hour, and all of our episodes can be found at soundcloud.com/Disney Magic Hour Podcast. That's it, guys. Have fun. Go see the BFG. Good night, Pete. See you later, guys.